welcome to the IOMSN Town Hall Discussions conference call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. A brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. It is now my pleasure to introduce your host, Jennifer Shmerka. Thank you, Ms. Shmerka. You may begin.
Thank you, Robin. Good evening, everyone. Happy Hanukkah to those of you who might be celebrating. On behalf of the IOMSN and as co-chair for this program, I would like to welcome you to this year's final town hall discussion entitled Avoiding Burnout in MS Nurses, presented by Connie Easterling. As a reminder, these educational sessions will be recorded and will be available as podcasts on the IOMSN website at www.iomsn.org. This is our final town hall discussion for the year, and we would like to acknowledge and show our appreciation to Biogen IDEC for supporting this project through an unrestricted educational grant. So this evening we will begin with Connie. I would like to take the honor to introduce my friend and colleague. Connie is an adult registered nurse practitioner and clinical coordinator of the MS Care Center of Neurological Services of Orlando, or for short, NSO. She has been exclusively in practice working with multiple sclerosis since 1998. She currently promotes MS education by lecturing frequently to community, student, and professional groups throughout the United States. And she's very well published, including several articles related to MS nursing and patient care. Additionally, Connie serves as a member at large on the Consortium of MS Centers Board of Directors and has been an active member of the IOMSN since 1999. She currently serves on the Board of Directors and has served since 2006. Furthermore, she's also been an IOMSN liaison to the Multiple Sclerosis Nurses, the International Certification Board since 2007, and she was the recipient of the 2009 June Helper Award for Excellence in MS Nursing. So suffice it to say, she is a real underachiever in MS nursing, but we're so excited to have you to serve as our last, but certainly not least, speaker for tonight's program. So please join me in welcoming Connie for this evening's meeting. Connie, I'm turning the meeting over to you.
Okay, thanks, Jen. And I want to thank Jen and Lori for inviting me to present on this topic. You know, there are many wonderful rewards in being an MS nurse. I think we are a special group. We're a very unique group. And in preparation for the topic, I would like to just go over the philosophy of MS nursing as well as the definition of MS nursing as defined by the International Organization of MS Nurses. The philosophy of MS nursing is for the MS nurse to shape the course of disease by facilitating treatment that interrupts acute episodes and delays progression of pathology and to facilitate the management of MS symptoms. The MS nurse enhances and promotes safe, maximal, and where possible, independent function. The MS nurse is a competent expert who collaborates with those affected by MS and shares knowledge, strength, and hope. She can enhance adaptive and coping skills, facilitate empowerment and a sense of control, and thereby engenders hope and positive attitudes among those affected by MS. And the MS nurse actually wears many hats. Our role is vast. We're care providers, we're educators, facilitators, we're investigators, negotiators, consultants, and advocates. And in our role, we strive to promote optimal outcomes for our patients and certainly to benefit their quality of life. Kathy Costello, our colleague from Johns Hopkins, developed a schematic of optimal MS management. And in that schematic, there were six components, which were disease modification, support systems, symptom management, wellness, clinical findings, and MRI findings. Our role is comprehensive, it's quite complex, and it can lead to a phenomenon called compassion fatigue. Compassion fatigue is a contemporary term. It's been related to the concept of personal exposure to suffering on a regular basis. The term was first used in the context of the study of burnout nearly two decades ago and is described as the loss of the ability to nurture and is associated with the cost of caring. Compassion fatigue and burnout have both been found in studies of care providers, especially those who work with persons with disability. And as MS nurses, we know we enter the lives of our patients and families at a critical time in their life. And we develop, and we're always encouraged to develop, this therapeutic relationship as we become partners rather than observers in patients' MS journey. So compassion fatigue is defined as a relational phenomena stemming from emotional effect of observing patients repeatedly being faced with health care changes or decline. So there are certain risk factors for compassion fatigue. Close interpersonal relationship with patients and families is seen in caring professionals whose personal identity is closely related with their professional role. Another risk factor is caring for patients with complex patient needs. And we know that our patients, certainly, their needs can certainly be complex, and they tend to increase over time. Another risk factor is unrealistic expectations, especially regarding patient outcomes that may lead to our disappointment. Caring is one of our fundamental tenets of nursing, and we often are very vulnerable to compassion fatigue because the outcomes are not always what we would want or expect. And then if we have on top of that an expanding workload, long work hours, and if we fail to attend to our own emotional needs by putting others, especially patients, before our own physical and emotional health, those are all risk factors for compassion fatigue. Compassion fatigue manifests itself in a number of ways. There's like five different categories: emotional, intellectual, physical, social, and work-related manifestations, such as anger, apathy. The person may feel less enthusiastic about work. There may be irritability. Intellectually, we may become bored with our role. We may have a weakened attention. Physically, we show a lack of energy. We feel tired all the time, weary, a sense of fatigue. Socially, we may become indifferent. We may have feelings of isolation, of detachment from not only our colleagues, but from family and friends. And in the workplace, we may have an increase in absenteeism. We may feel that we want to avoid patient situations or even avoid certain patients, and our performance can be affected by that. Sometimes there's somatic complaints too, such as achiness, poor sleep, or GI symptoms. There are certain interventions that are very important in order to prevent compassion fatigue, and we have to be proactive in those interventions. But first, I want to just read to you a quote by Deborah Boyle in her article entitled Countering Compassion Fatigue. She said that the expectation that we can be immersed in suffering and loss daily and not be touched by it is as unrealistic as expecting to be able to walk on water without getting wet. And I thought that was so very true. We are going to be immersed in people's lives, and so we have to prepare ourselves for disappointment. In the work life, there has to be balance, and balance is the key word. We have to develop a personal philosophy. So I'd recommend that you sit down and you analyze yourself and you write your own personal philosophy. And then you engage in writing certain self-care activities that would be good for you, such as exercise, diet, meditation, enjoying non-working relationships, spending time with your family, and write down how you're going to balance work and your personal life. And also, you should be aware of your own personal triggers, and they might be different for everybody. So you might want to write those down and be aware of them and be proactive and in being able to identify what they are. So, and then to develop some stress management techniques and coping strategies and develop supportive relationships. You know, we all live so far away from each other. Jen and I live in the same state, but we don't live close to each other. But she's a telephone call away from me, as is other colleagues in the work. In the work setting, you should develop those peer relationships where you work as well, and always seek collegial support. Burnout and compassion fatigue have been compared, and it's interesting the comparison that we see in terms of etiology, chronology, and outcomes. Burnout is reactional. It's a response to the work environment and the stressors at work. Compassion fatigue is relational. It's the consequences of caring for those who are suffering. A burnout is generally gradual over time. Compassion fatigue is usually has a sudden onset due to response of disappointment of outcomes and so forth. So the outcome of burnout may be withdrawal from the role itself. Many people leave the workforce because they cannot tolerate or continue working or coping in that environment. In compassion fatigue, individuals can continue to work. They can continue with endurance and giving, but the result may be an imbalance of empathy and objectivity. Compassion fatigue is far more common in the health industry than is burnout. Burnout is defined as the progressive loss of idealism, energy, and purpose experienced by people in helping professions as a result of the conditions of their work. There are high levels of burnout among healthcare professionals, and it's been well documented in the literature. The rates of stress and burnout among nurses has been found to be higher than rates among other healthcare professionals, and approximately 40% of hospital nurses have burnout levels that are higher than the norm for other healthcare workers. There have been a number of studies that have indicated that the prevalence of burnout is higher among nurses in stressful settings such as oncology, mental health, emergency medicine, and critical care. The highest rates of dissatisfaction are found among staff nurses, nurse clinicians, and supervisors, and the lowest rates among nurse midwives, certified nurse anesthetists, and nurse practitioners. The risk factors for burnout are divided into three categories: work environment, demographic variables, and personality traits. In the work environment, the person may feel overloaded. She just has too much work to do. She doesn't ever feel a sense of accomplishment. She has a lack of control, and she feels unappreciated. There's an absence of community or a lack of common bond among coworkers. Demographic variables are very interesting. The family status seems to play an important role in burnout. There are rates of burnout that are higher among single workers and workers with no children than among married workers and those with children. The belief is that the emotional resources from family are thought to be the reason for the difference. They tend to be those with higher education, and the difference may be the result of expectations associated with an advanced degree or with the job choices. And then personality traits, individuals that are at risk for burnout tend to have low self-esteem or low confidence. They have a need for approval. They're overachievers. They're impatient. They may be intolerant, and they are perfectionists, actually, in the workplace. The manifestations of burnout include somatic symptoms such as exhaustion, GI disorders, headache, insomnia, poor appetite, and musculoskeletal symptoms, but it can also lead to hypertension. Psychologically, they may express anger, depression, anxiety, frustration, irritability, a lack of drive, decreased ability to cope, and in the work environment. And then socially, they may have an inability to communicate, not just with coworkers, but with family and friends, and they may neglect their social obligations, even to the point of marital dysfunction. The most common stress-related symptom related to burnout is fatigue. In a survey of burnout among 600 American workers, exhaustion was reported by 62% of those who felt that they were stressed or burned out at work. The strategies to avoid burnout include taking care of oneself and developing a self-care plan. You know, we always develop a care plan for our patients, but we need to develop a care plan for ourselves so that we can re-energize and restore and maintain physical and emotional stamina so that we can deal with work stress when it happens. Also, we need to maintain priorities and schedule vacations and be active in family life and make that balance and happen and recognize our own limitations. In professional lifestyle, we need to set realistic goals and become advocates for the workforce or for the site where we work. Seek support of colleagues. And one thing that I saw throughout the literature was that we should grieve well. We should have a healthy response to stress or loss, and that's important in avoiding burnout. And then organizationally, we need to create a healthy, a supportive environment. And by doing that, we as nurses need to take a leadership role to foster those relationships with our colleagues and to work with our supervisors to make the work environment more healthy. And then we need to support younger nurses as well. Excuse me. There also are a number of tools that are available to measure burnout and compassion fatigue. Christina Maslach actually has spent years on most of her career in studying burnout. She has a website called mindgarden.com where she has the Maslach burnout inventory discussed. She does have proprietary restrictions, but you can access her site and you may have to pay a fee for her tool. John Pfifferling devised the Burnout Risk Survey, and his site is the Center for Professional Well-Being at cpwb.org/burnout. He has a tool that's only 19 items. It's a self-assessment, and it's easy to score. And then there's a professional quality of life scale that includes both burnout as well as compassion fatigue, and you can find those scales at compassionfatigue.org. It's a 30-item self-assessment questionnaire. It's a little bit difficult to score, but it provides you a booklet to download and actually explains how to score the item. In conclusion, MS nurses need to be aware that we are at risk for compassion fatigue as we work with patients with chronic disease, and that's often progressive. We have to identify our own personal triggers, our signs of compassion fatigue and burnout, and develop our own personal care plan. We should devise also a wide range of coping strategies and support systems to revitalize our compassion and minimize the risk of burnout. We need to nurture ourselves. We need to work together to create a healthy work environment with our coworkers, and we need to mentor young nurses and advocate for ourselves and our colleagues. Matum and Bielski, in their article on compassion fatigue, made the statement, compassion, often the ultimate gift of nurse to patient, must be nourished to be sustained. So my hope for you over this holiday season is that you will nourish your compassion so that you can be a most effective MS nurse. Okay, Jen, I'm going to turn it over to you.
Great job, Connie.
Thank you.
Excuse me. Thank you for kind of, you know, putting words to, I think, probably many emotions that many of us throughout certain times of our career probably have experienced. And it's interesting that you kind of illuminate the difference between compassion fatigue and burnout. And I have to say, when we went over this kind of in rehearsal, it was the first time I'd really come across compassion fatigue. And I found it so interesting that, we always kind of term burnout just as the natural kind of term of like, I really need vacation.
Yeah, we use that all the time. I had not heard of compassion fatigue either. Carrie Simano sent me, who is one of our colleagues in New York. I believe she's still in New York. She sent me an article on compassion fatigue when she heard I was going to be doing this presentation, and it was really enlightening to realize that we don't always experience burnout, but we very frequently may experience compassion fatigue.
And the one thing I wanted to ask you to just comment on, and then we'll kind of open up the audience. So audience, I hope you're getting ready with some good questions or comments. Did you find it all in your research, Connie, that is it possible, I mean, it seems like it might be, is it possible to experience both at the same time concomitantly?
Oh, I'm sure. I didn't see anything in the literature about both happening at the same time, but in many of the articles on compassion fatigue or burnout, they reference the other phenomena, which was really interesting. But if the person is having issues with their relationship, you know, with patients, and they are feeling that compassion fatigue while at the same time they're unhappy in their current work environment, I can see that that would happen. Burnout is more severe than compassion fatigue, but compassion fatigue is much more frequent in healthcare workers.
You would think that, you know, certainly a nurse experiencing one or either or both, you know, that would jeopardize the quality of care you're able to provide.
Right. And it's interesting because, I mean, how many of us have ever gone to work and said, and our secretary say, you have a call from this particular patient, and you go, oh, I just cannot deal with that patient one more time. Or I cannot see that patient with primary progressive MS one more time. And so in our minds, that should be a trigger for us that we need to really reanalyze ourselves, and because maybe we're, you know, having indications of compassion fatigue. Maybe we're fatigued or just actually tired, and that is one of the symptoms of compassion fatigue.
Yeah. So before I have Robin give the instructions, I just wanted, Connie, to give you an opportunity if there's a question that maybe you want to pose to the audience members before we go ahead and open up the line.
Okay. Well, I would like to hear what other people think and about the aspects of MS nursing that may place us at potential risk for compassion fatigue. I'd like to hear what they think, and maybe let us know of their experiences where they may have actually had compassion fatigue.